So we're continuing our series now on kind of where our church is going. So let's rewind. Okay, so we're outgrown this building. So the story is this. We've outgrown this building, and we're like, okay, what should we do? We need to find a place desperately. So we found this place, and we thought, what about this place? And it was in Lazelle. So if you're new to Birmingham, Lazelle's is not the safest area. I think they're famous for, there's a riots that went on there. And it's also a really mixed ethnic community. And when we heard about this place, I thought, wow, this is pretty exciting. If our church moved in there, will we be able to reach across demographic? What would that mean for Mandarin speakers and Cantonese speakers? How would they adjust? And of course, the first instinct of, this happens, I'm sure, when you're driving your car with your parents or yourself through a rough area, the first thing you do is you lock your doors. That's what my parents used to always do, and I think that's still what Chinese people do today. And I was thinking about it, and we're talking about this building, thinking, God, do you want to lead us to this building? Do you want us to be in this place? And there's so much conversations going on, like, would we move here? It's quite a rough area. Would we be able to survive? What does this mean for us as Christians? And there was a debate, because as Christians, there's this idea of, like, well, we should also really bless other communities. We shouldn't be so inclusive. And it's one of the struggles for us, right? Because, all right, so on the outside of our church, it says Birmingham Chinese Evangelical Church. But at the same time, most of us are not, we're probably more Western than we are Chinese. Maybe we are Chinese ethnically, but I wouldn't enter into a war with China and pick China as my side. So it makes us a very kind of complicated identity issue, like who are we, where do we belong, what's our purpose, what does an English congregation and a Chinese church mean? Are we supposed to just hang out with Chinese people? Because this is the most Chinese people I've hung out with in a long time. I don't know what I should do. And it was at this time where God was really challenging me and to ask that question to him. You know, God, what's the point of a Chinese church? Okay, now, if you speak Mandarin and you it's your main language, or you speak Cantonese, that's your main language, I understand it's really important to have a Chinese church because you need to go someplace where at least they speak your language. But what about us? We speak English. I actually speak zero Chinese. So I'm like, I only eat sweet and sour chicken when I go to Chinese restaurants. So I'm not that Chinese. So part of me has always had this bicultural kind of cross-cultural dilemma. One, because I'm born in America, grew up in America, but when I was in America, I hung out with Chinese people because there were so many of them. But then I moved to England, and I will never be fully British. I don't feel like I always connect with them. But at the same time, I'm not Chinese either. And at the same time, it's like, well, that actually, but this church is it's okay, right? Are we doing something bad? One of the biggest problems with our concept of unity is we think everyone has to be the same. That's what it means to be united. Either to be in the same place, doing the same things, eating the same kind of food, that's unity. But actually, there's a real beauty in diversity, in the complexity of different people and different backgrounds. And when we take race and ethnicity out of the question, we also talk about age differences from children to senior citizens. And we talk about demographic differences from people who are poor or homeless to people who make a lot of money. And actually in the early church, because there were no churches to pick from, everyone would just gather into the same pool. But at the same time, they had those same tensions, those same conflicts of normally outside, I don't hang out with people like you, but somehow in the church, I now have to be in the same room. What does that mean? So as I was praying about this and asking God, well, what does this mean for us as a Chinese church? Should we move to Lazelle? Should we be in this place? As we talked and prayed, it became very clear. You could move to Lazelle's, but do you think you're ready to really help that community? See, there's a difference between kind of the noble idea that I'm going to sail into this place and we're going to help those less privileged people with our greater amounts of wisdom and knowledge, but that's not how Jesus does things. He doesn't come in like an NGO and saying, well, I've got some money from a government grant and we're going to provide these services for you. No, Jesus always did it with this great capacity to love. And when we talk about this great capacity to love, he understood people. But the other thing about him was he understood himself. He didn't act out of insecurity or out of fear or out of paranoia. When you read about Jesus in the Bible, you suddenly see this person who was so secure, not just in what the world says your internal security is, but he was secure because he was God. And he knew, look, I understand and love people, but I'm not concerned with how I'm judged. And so in my head, I thought, okay, well, you're right. Actually, we're not ready. If we showed up in Lozelle's, what would happen? We would probably still just be a Chinese church, and every week we'd import throughout the day 400 Chinese people into this area, and after each service, they'd all leave. How it feels so wrong, right? It's like a quick migration of Chinese people in their cars, and then they all leave again. It's almost damaging. And I was like, God, okay, well, that doesn't seem right, does it? And God was like, no, it doesn't seem right, but what's the problem? Is the problem that you're racist, Bert? Is that the issue? And I was like, no, I'm not racist, right? Am I racist? I don't want to be racist. And God was really convicting. He was saying, look, the problem is you're not ready, because you're not ready to face the kind of issues that other people have. In fact, within the church itself, how are they doing? Are people ready to move forward? So this is the story kind of when we started to think about, well, what does it mean to kind of be church? And for us, normally when we think of church, we think of the building. And I talk about this every, we talk about this building, but actually when God talks about church, he talks about the people. A broad range of people, and they're all united by one thing, and it's God. More specifically, it's Jesus Christ who unites us all. Why? Because all of us in God's church, we knew what it's like to know Jesus as Lord. We knew what a messed up kind of life we were living in, and Jesus saved us. And it's not about somehow us being greater or smarter or better than people around us. It's because of God's great love, we suddenly realize that Jesus loves us and desires us to move forward. And that's what unites us. That's what puts us aside. That's what we can not worry about the differences and whether they sing different songs or whether they look different. But actually, at our very heart, at the very core, it is the fact that I'm a broken, messed up person, but because of Jesus' love, he's not just given me a second chance, but he's helping me to become more like him. So then that led us to the question of, okay, well, what does this whole church thing kind of mean? So over the past 20 years of serving in churches in the UK, I've learned a few different things. And this is not a structure as much as it's, I think cards is a good example. These are 5 cards that you put out and say, well, actually, in my life, I want to have this kind of balance. I want to have a balance in this sort of elements. And the first one is congregation. And this is what we normally think of as church, when we all gather together, because there's something special about gathering with more people. There's something that resonates in your heart. It's like when everyone gets together to watch the rugby and they're all in the stadium together, there's a sense of like, yeah, this is awesome. It's why football matches, they say that's the 12th. I only know basketball terms. What's the extra, you know, when they have everyone, they're all singing and it gives them extra energy. I speak about like a video game. But 12th, the 12th. Yeah, it's 12th, right? Okay, fine. 12th man. Thank you. I was right. It's like the 12th man, right? So they, as they sing, it's almost like it gives this extra boost. And it's this whole unity of this singing, except for those people singing racist chants. We forget about those people. And then you have this other great unity where this kind of encouraging people forward. There's something powerful about this. And that's what this first thing was about, congregation. When we think about Sunday, is there something great about coming together? And in this atmosphere, saying, God, you are great, you are awesome, I want to glorify you. And as you're being glorified, speak to me, challenge me. You know, let your truth challenge me and resound in me in some way to get me ready to go out and face the week. Because actually, you all have the harder jobs because you have to go out and see people, other people, not Christians, and deal with managers that are annoying, or deal with the NHS, or deal with government. And you have to worry about your jobs and losing money. And it's saying, I don't know how to be a Christian in this kind of environment. I don't know how to talk to people. I don't know. I don't want to go out drinking every night, but I feel like I can't connect unless I do. And it's saying, well, when we come together as a congregation, it reminds us, you know what, let's press on. We can do this. But the problem with if you only just had congregation, if church was only just this one meeting, and that'd be, you could survive, you would still walk away like, okay, look, I need something more. The next slide is communion. Inside of all of these, you might say, is part of communion. But when I talk about communion, it is the best way I can explain it is, let's say you're going through a hard time. Something serious happens. Something tragic happens in your life. Who are the people that you would immediately tell, can you pray for me? I need someone to pray for me. Who can I? Now, I think traditionally it is, let's call the pastor, and he will come and arrive like on a chariot, and he will pray for you, and it will be fine. Number one, that's not a sustainable idea. Number two, Jesus didn't do that. He picked 12 disciples, and then he left. But he gave us all his Holy Spirit, and the whole idea of that is, hey, if I give you my spirit, you are now saints, and all of you can pray for each other. But us as humans, it's actually the sense of, I need something that's not just friendship. I need some place where I can actually have spiritual trust and connection, where actually within this group, someone can pray for me. Now, the thing is, you wish you would be, I would love to grow to this group. Just put me in this group and immediately, oh, yes, I feel instantly. That's not how it works, unfortunately. We live in this thing called time. And within time, we live with people, which means you have to build trust and relationships and honesty. And you have to deal with each other as kind of, I actually don't like this person very much, and I wish they weren't in my group because they kind of annoy me. But that's actually the beautiful part of church. You're what, Bert? You know, being with annoying people is the best part of church? It is. Do you know why? Because it teaches you the greatest part of God, which is grace, which is loving those who are different than you and saying, okay, let's come together. And look, I struggle every week because everything you say annoys me. And the first thing, the world's mentality is, my goal is to get this person to leave the group so that I can be in a happy group. But God's mentality is, I love you so much, I've put this annoying person in this group for you so that you can grow in grace and patience and you can learn what it means to love and pray for someone. And it's like, this is why I don't want to be a Christian. You're trying to actually make me into a better person through a very painful method. And then Jesus said, oh, yeah, that's cool. I died on the cross for you, by the way. Oh, right, okay, yeah, oh, fine. Pull out that trump card, Messiah. Okay, see, community is in those smaller pockets, and we try to say somewhere between around 7 people. The reason we say 7 is because when you have introverts and extroverts together, once you get past 7, all the extroverts take over and all the introverts sit there very quietly. And it's not that introverts don't want to speak. It's that, like, okay, there's so much energy going on in this room right now. I'm just going to stay here and contain. I'm going to be okay. But when you're under 7 people, like 6, 5, the introverts are like, oh, okay, this is, now we can actually share and listen to each other and there's less pressure, but maybe it's good because I want to share some things in my life and I'd like to build some connections so that when trouble hits or if I'm going through a hard time, someone can pray for me. The worst thing is, and I see this all the time, is we have no one to pray for us, we have no one to talk to, and then it just builds up inside of us because we've got to always be strong until one day we snap and it's like, you can't take it anymore. And it seems like that's not the way God designed us, right? There's something beautiful about connection in groups, about a place to kind of share a little bit more. Now, the great thing about this is you can say, well, this is great. So you have these groups. You come and you let the Bible kind of speak to you. You share about your prayer requests. You learn in that way. And that's kind of the idea of the life groups. But then the next thing that I saw that happened was fine. You had these great relational connections. But then you have people who are like, oh, yeah, I think Jesus did this. I'm not sure. I haven't really read the Bible all the way through. I don't really know. I feel like a bad Christian. I feel like if I was a better Christian, I would know more. Or you try to talk to someone in your workplace, and they say, how can you say the Bible is real? And you're like, I don't know, because it says so in the song. It's like, and then we realize, actually, one of the things it says in the Bible is, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. There's something amazing about letting your mind grow in knowing it, in loving and understanding God. Now, the Bible is amazing because it's actually this two-way sort of thing. When you ask God and you say, God, actually, I don't understand the Bible. Can you really help me? And you come together in a group and you learn. It's as if the Bible becomes clearer. God clarifies things for you as you read it. And it hits you here. Like one time I was reading the Bible, and it was only out of desperation. I was reading the Bible, and after reading, I was like so excited. I was like, I cannot believe I've ever been this excited in my life after reading something, because I just knew and I understood, wow, God's love is so deep. And I got that from reading the Bible, not from like singing a song with this really emotional music in the background, but by reading something and like convict and challenge your heart so much. So we said, well, we need to have some places to have greater cultivation. So we thought, well, we could do this through classes, through teaching. So actually, you have these sort of classes, half-taught, half-discussion, where people can learn and grow. And all of these things are in the pipeline, because we only decided to head this direction this year. And I've been spending a few weeks just talking about each sort of one. And again, the reason you do this is saying, look, if we move to some place, and for God is calling us to be reaching different people, we have to be ready to love people who are different than us, to figure out ways to help teach and learn in our heads. At the same time, learn how to worship together differently. Because if you want to know my heart is really this, is really for the UK. But I learned this from seeing my son when he goes to school. So he's the only Chinese kid in his school. Until his brother goes, then there'll be two Chinese kids in this school. Oh, wait, but then now there's Grace. Yes, so there's, we already have two Chinese kids in the school. Oh, the percentage has gone up to 0.2. Right. But I noticed the first thing, my son went to school, and he you know, kids, they're not intentionally racist, I don't think, unless their parents are intentionally racist. But he goes to school, and immediately all his friends are other British ethnic minorities. I don't know how that happened. I said... And it's not like I said, okay, only hang out with British ethnic minorities, my son. But there was a connection that it's really weird that somehow they just got along. And actually our youngest son, who just started nursery, his best friend is another British ethnic minority. And I started thinking, well, you know, actually one of the great things about being Chinese is we're generally quite non-confrontational. And we get along kind of with, if we can get past our racism, we get along with everybody, because we don't want to pick a fight with anyone. We're happy. The traditional Chinese mentality is we're happy because as long as they give us money, we're fine. We'll serve anybody. But for us as Christians, it's a little bit deeper. It's like, actually, but we want to see and know the good and the great in everyone and to bless that. My heart has always been like, how are we going to reach other British ethnic minorities? Who's going to tell them about God? Like, we don't carry colonial baggage with us. Not yet, at least. Maybe in another 200 years, we'll see what happens with China. But for the meantime, we're still okay. If we get over ourselves and say, well, let's just be people who love and listen and bless. Actually, we're great friends with people. Actually, you'll know, actually, for the BBCs, the only Chinese people you know went to Chinese school with you. Or if you went to church. But actually, most of your friends are not. Because there's never been a high enough density of Chinese to really say, we're only going to hang out with Chinese people. Rather, we'll hang out with anybody. So our church, I think, is moving, at least the English congregation, we're moving into this place of like a healthy church invites any of your friends, anyone around you to say, come, I want you to meet God. I want you to know him. But we're starting with this core. Why? Because a lot of us, your parents were in the other generation. So you have a starting point. And if you look at this as a process, it's saying, okay, look, you've learned how to master this color, but now I want to show you how to paint with other colors, to paint another mural, to picture another story. for a lot of us, actually, this resonates with us. Because when we think about our friends and we think about those around us, we say, yeah, I really wish they would come to our church. But Bert, it says Chinese on the outside. And every time they come in here, they're the only minority. But in a different way. So it's saying, God, can you teach us? Can you prepare us? Can you take off the blinders and not just talk about racial differences? But we talk about other demographics. We talk about financial differences. And saying, well, you know what? You know, the picture of God's church is this kind of this one body where we bless and love one another. We encourage one another. When you're there to pray and support for each one. And that's the kind of picture that we're kind of painting. Now, we come back to this sort of thing. And today we're talking about consolidation. And this one is near and dear to my heart because it's something that I had to learn. And again, put this in the context of, look, okay, well, this is all about us trying to get healthier and learn and prepare for our friends, the people around us. If we want them to know God, how can we bring this blessing to their life? So just to summarize, this is how I kind of wrapped it up. Congregation is to gather, this meeting is to gather for the glory of God, gather as his flock, and gather to hear and respond. Community is gathering as communities of faith, as communities of grace, and communities of light. And those small groups, you meet together in those ways. Cultivation means gathering to grow in knowledge, but in the same time in truth and in action. And so we come to consolidation. Now, consolidation is a weird word anyways, because we don't say it a whole lot. But the idea of consolidation is this idea of something that you do to make secure, to strengthen, or to make firm or coherent, form into compact mass. And for a lot of us, when we talk about our relationship with God, we wouldn't say it's that kind of secure or that kind of strong of a mass. Sometimes you feel like, yeah, sometimes I feel connected or I have a lot of uncertainties or I have a lot of insecurities or doubts in myself. Consolidation is kind of like saying, okay, let's bring it together. But in particular, let's deal with you. And I want you to know God more and deeper. So like all these messages, I've been picking one passage and explaining it kind of in this way. And today we're looking at John chapter 21. And this is a very famous passage. This is after Jesus was crucified, he was resurrected. And the disciples started hearing Jesus alive, but they weren't sure. And so Jesus is on the beach and he's cooking. So he calls out to them. The fishermen, his previous disciples, and they're like, it's Jesus, and they jump off and they run to the shore. But there's one disciple in particular, Peter. And Peter was probably the most excitable, most passionate, most outspoken one of the disciples. And he would always stick his foot in his mouth by saying something, and then Jesus would be like, okay, I appreciate your passion, but you're wrong. And one of the things that Peter said was, Jesus was talking about that he was going to die, and Peter was like, no! Anyone messes with you, you know, I'm going to be there with you to the very end. You know, I'm going to be right there by your side. And then Jesus says to him, really? Because tonight you're going to deny knowing me three times before the rooster crows in the morning. And Peter's like, never. I will never, ever do that. Never, ever, ever. And then later that night, these guards come to take Jesus. And Peter jumps up and he slices off the ear of one of the guards and he's like, yeah, bring it on. And Jesus is like, what'd you do that for? And then he heals the guy's ear. And Peter's like, huh? And then they all run away and they take Jesus. And Jesus is arrested and Peter follows from a distance. And they take Jesus in for this kind of illegal secret trial. And so you can all read about this in the book of John. Fascinating. And Peter falls in and he's standing there. And he knows this is a serious thing. Like he could, you know, he's like, I don't want to get arrested and caught. And so one of the people that are gathering around this fire says, hey, wait, I know you. Oh, you're with the Jesus guy, weren't you? You're one. And he's like, no, it's not me. You've confused me with some other fine-looking gentleman. I paraphrased a little bit. He doesn't say fine-looking gentleman. And then another person then later says, no, I'm sure you were the one with Jesus. You're one of his, you know, regular followers. And it's funny because obviously if he's one of the most outspoken, you're going to probably recognize him. And he's like, no, that's not me. And then one more time, someone asked him, no, I'm sure. And he kind of vehemently swears like, no, that's not me. You've got me confused. I don't know this guy. And then the rooster crows. And Peter's like, oh my goodness. Jesus was right. Tonight I've already turned my back on him. I betrayed him. This is my teacher. Back then, it's a deep mentor relationship. when they say rabbi, teacher, it's actually one you followed closely through your life. It's a real mentor, sifu kind of relationship. And so for him to say, no, I don't know him, I've rejected him, is brutal. It's not just a verbal thing, it's not just a physical thing. It's like an emotional, spiritual rejection of like, no, I don't know who he is. You wouldn't say that. Because in return, what would happen is the teacher would say then, fine, if you don't know me, then you're not one of my disciples either. I cut you off. Go, get out of my sight. You're not one of my followers anymore. So Peter realizes this. So his last thoughts then is, and he sees Jesus crucified, and he goes back, and he knows his last thoughts are this. Oh, so the last things Jesus kind of told me was that I was going to deny him. I said I didn't, and I live with all this kind of regret. So this is Jesus comes back, and after he's alive again, and Peter jumps out of the boat and runs to Jesus, and they're having this meal, and then Jesus has this one-on-one conversation with Peter. And he says, when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he said to them, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. And then Jesus said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. Now, this is actually the beginning of Jesus having this first real conversation here with Peter about his life. And you see here, there's actually two things that happen. The first time it says, feed my lambs. The second says, tend my sheep. And the Greek word is different there because they're actually meaning different things. Feeding is actually physically nourishing them, giving them, you know, milk and stuff like that. So, but in this context, when he says, feed my sheep, he's saying, look, nourish the people around you with my truth, my word. Teach them. Tending means guard or guide or to put into the fold. In other words, protect. And so then Jesus is saying, well, tend my sheep, guard them, protect them, look after them, watch over them. Now, anything a rabbi says to their disciples, it's saying, look, you can do this because you have seen me do this. Anything you have seen me do, you can do as well because you are my disciple. So when Jesus is saying this to Peter, he's also saying, do you remember how much I fed you? Do you know how much you learned from my example, from my teaching, from my understanding? Do you remember all that? Then he says, tend my sheep. Do you remember how often, Peter, I protected you and guarded and watched over you? So there's such layers of complexity of human connection going on here, because on one hand, Jesus is saying, do this because you've seen me do this. You've seen me do this to you personally. And you know in Peter's head, in his heart, he's like, yep, and I rejected you. And I rejected all your food, and you were the one who was protecting me, and when you needed protection, I ran away, and I denied knowing you. How can I ever move forward from this? See, the first thing about consolidation is actually about strengthening your history. And I don't want to say dealing with your past or dealing with your past problems. Because so often when we think about it that way, we say, okay, I just want to move on from a past. I don't want to think about it. I just want to reject it and move on. But actually, one of the things it says in the Bible is that Jesus triumphs over the enemies. And he makes trophies of them. In other words, he holds them up as victories and says, look, this used to be your enemy, but now I demonstrate my power over it. When the Bible talks about strengthening your past, it's saying, look, let's go back into your past, into some of the hurtful things. And let's bring Jesus into it. Because when you are healed and you see Jesus' victory over these wounds of the past, emotional, possibly physical, possibly spiritual, you don't come out just trying to reject it and move on and just say, I want to live my life differently. But rather God says, look, this is what happened to you in the past, but I still loved you and I was there, and I will make you stronger so that you can be a blessing to others. We know this is true because even when you watch humanity, when you see people confess and share their stories with other people and say, I was struggled with this in the past, but now I use this to bless other people. You see, wow, that's so courageous. That strength, it really gives them hope. And you start realizing, actually, there are a lot of people who have struggled similar or even worse painful things in the past, and they need people like you who have found victory from Jesus, who have found the strength to get past that past and to re-understand that past, to bring that blessing into their life. What Jesus is doing in this first part is actually he's helping to strengthen Peter's past. And it is a painful, difficult situation because he's asking him tough emotional questions. And this conversation, you understand, is also a spiritual conversation where Jesus is saying, look, do you really love me? Do you understand who I am? And Peter is trying to respond with that same vibrancy. Yes, I know. Yes, I will. But you probably sense like, is he saying it from his own strength? Like, look, I messed up last time, but this time I'm really going to do it. Or he's saying, God, you're right, I know. Heal me and let me move forward. The conversation goes on, and this is really clear because Jesus asks three times, the same number of times that Peter disowns him, right? So he said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. This last time, Peter says this. And so the first few times I read it like a North American kind of sarcastic person. Like, you know that I love you. God. Obviously, you know, stop questioning me. But if you understand this in the context, you don't speak to a rabbi in that kind of sarcastic tone. Maybe modern day students have that kind of attitude to your teachers, but back then, no, you don't speak to your beloved teachers that way. This kind of crying out is that final brokenness. You know everything. In other words, look deep in my heart. I now give you everything. All the pain, all the wounds, all my shame, all my regrets. You know everything. And look inside. I love you. In that love you and that I love you, there is I'm sorry. I can't do it. I don't know if I can worthy to be your disciple. And Jesus says, feed my sheep. It comes back to that first one. In other words, that was that last restoration, that last thing to say, yep, I do know everything. I know everything about you. I know everything that you've done. I know everything that will happen to you in the future. And I'm still asking you to feed my sheep. Wow, how powerful is it when you really mess up something really, really bad? So bad that the person that your teacher that you love, the greatest person in the world, gets killed because of it? How do you go on living? And here Jesus, who is back, looks at him and says, yep, I know, but I love you, and I forgive you, and I still believe that I am going to work through you. Feed my sheep. He doesn't take it back. So, okay, well, I do know everything, and you're not ready to feed my sheep. So I want you to just scoop poo, okay? Just do the poo scooping, and we'll leave all the heavy lifting to someone else. He doesn't do that. He immediately brings him back and blesses him. This is what we would say is strengthening your present. In other words, where he is right now, to say, yes, you can move forward. We want to deal with those spiritual, emotional wounds in the past, and we want you to understand who you are and how you can move forward. But this passage doesn't stop there. Then Jesus goes on and says, truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and none other will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, follow me. There's this great moment where Jesus at this moment just says these two lines, and for us, we just kind of read and gloss over it. But he says, you know, when you were younger, you know, you would dress yourself and decide where you want to go yourself. But when you're older, someone's going to lead you someplace else. In other words, he says, I know your past. I know your future. Follow me. trust me in this. That follow me is, again, that reinstatement of Peter into the discipleship. But it's also kind of a saying, look, God wants to strengthen your future. The reason he said someone's going to lead you where you don't want to go is because Peter was martyred. In other words, he was taken to be killed like Jesus. And Jesus knew this. But he was also saying, and you won't be afraid, or don't be afraid. Follow me. I will strengthen you to the point where you can deal with this in the future. And that is amazing, isn't it? Because so much for us, we want to know, God, will you use us in the future? But at the same time, we feel so inadequate. In fact, sometimes we're so more caught up with maybe we can find a job or get through this course, or I don't know how to deal with my family. I don't know what happens when my parents get old. What does it all mean? But God, I will follow you, and I know that you will strengthen my future. If I had to try to explain what consolidation is, it is this idea of the freedom to love God more, the freedom to love God deeper, and the freedom to love God stronger. See, the thing is, when I say love, we only normally think of one kind of love, which is romantic kind of love. But if you've ever been in a relationship, you understand that doesn't last that long, because at some point it becomes, or else, why are you so annoying? And then you find out actually the reasons you find them so annoying is not their problem, but it's because you have all these insecurities that you've never dealt with, or because your parents never loved you enough when you were younger, or because you adopted all these really annoying habits and you're the annoying one and they want to break up with you because of that and you're really clingy and you're like, I don't know what it is. So we actually go into all our relationships with the same kind of baggage. And I bet you never thought, oh, do I go into my relationship with God with this kind of baggage? Am I clingy? Am I distant? Do I only want to sing songs but not think about him? Do I not want to engage my mind but only my heart? See, the amazing thing about God is like, yeah, he's like, I totally know. I know all about your past. I know why you are the way you are. But I want to help you through that. And as you trust me, I'm going to teach you what it really means to love more, to be more forgiving, to be more gracious. And for a lot of us, it's like, gosh, I would love that because I'm a bad boyfriend or a bad girlfriend at the moment, or I'm a bad son or a daughter, or I'm a bad parent. I know I carry all this kind of emotional and spiritual baggage into my life. There's more than that. It's the spiritual baggage. I mean, some in Chinese culture, sometimes when they're little, so this is quite common. So a child will be ill. The parents will be like, oh, no, we don't know what to do. Well, let's go take him to go see one of those Chinese priest people. And the Chinese priest people say, oh, your child is sick. We're going to write these words on this paper. And this word is the paper. What it means is you're going to give this child to this god, and the god will heal him. And you're like, okay, fine, whatever, just make the baby better. So they're like, okay, fine. So what they'll do is they'll burn the paper, they'll put in some tea, and they'll say, no, drink, make the baby drink this. Or it's probably not a baby, like a little cellular toddler. Make the toddler drink this, and then drink it, and then the baby will get better, the toddler will get better, and then like 15 years later, the child will get really sick, and he'll be like, well, it's not a child anymore. Like, what's going on? What's going on? And say, I don't know. It's just really ill all the time. Or else they become a Christian, and there's a big battle that goes on. And trust me, I did not believe any of this when I was younger, okay? My church never talked about any of this. But then I came out here and saw all of it. And it blew me away. And I said, whoa, there is really a spiritual dimension to things. And I've seen people who carry this baggage, this spiritual baggage. It's not their fault. Their parents did it. But they carry this into their life. And when they try to come and engage with God, they're like, I can't hear God. I can't connect. Something is blocking, and every time, instead of seeing God, I just get really annoying images, or I hear these voices, and God is saying, look, I want you to have that breakthrough. I want you to have some freedom. Now, not every issue is spiritual, okay? You can't spiritualize every single thing. Some of them are, and some of them aren't. But there is this great thing of saying, God, will you lead us and teach us, and can we cover our bases? Because when you break through those walls, people can actually start to love more. They don't seem so confused or distracted. Consolidation in our church, and this is kind of what we're aiming towards and moving towards, is the idea of, look, we want to have at least three things. One is spiritual breakthrough, to help people deal with their spiritual histories, their pasts, those mistakes, and basically saying, God, will you forgive me and let me move forward? And also any other kind of deeper spiritual issues that they might be carrying around. But the second part of consolidation is dealing with emotional issues, like the burdens of your parents getting divorced, or maybe as a child, you were attacked or abused, and saying, God, can you help me move forward from this? Can I see where you were, and can you strengthen my relationships? In other words, some counseling. And we have the chance because actually God's starting to raise up people who are trained in counseling in our church. So it's kind of this emotional kind of healing. And then the third one is actually strengthening your future. Is actually, maybe you don't have any spiritual issues, maybe you don't have any emotional issues, but you're just really, really disorganized and can't manage your finances and can't wake up on time because you're lazy. Sometimes it's helpful to have a mentor just to sit there and tell you, get up out of bed and get your life together. I shouldn't look at the university students, but I can't help it. In other words, not everything is an emotional issue, not everything is a deep spiritual issue, but there might be overlapping in different aspects. And sometimes it's just bad habits. We're saying, can we get to the place where our church has people to bless and to help at each one of these stages? And we become healthier so that we can be a blessing to someone else along the way. Because you'll find some of you are really gifted in listening and counseling. Others of you are really gifted in spiritual breakthrough. Others of you are just really good at telling people what they should be doing instead of faffing about all the time. And instead of seeing that those differences are bad and annoying, you're saying, wow, this is great because we can really help everybody try to move forward. Because when we start thinking about some of our friends or people on the fringes, people who would say are acquaintances, we understand, wow, they could really benefit from a lot of this. Or if you think about yourself, so could I. When we talk about these kind of five C's, they're not things that are strictly in place at the moment. But for us, it's like saying, God, can you get us there so that we can just bless other people so that your name can be glorified? And one of the things to just say is, God, can you consolidate my life, my relationship with you? Can you show me what things need to be sorted out? Can you help prepare me? Because I want to be a blessing to other people. I don't want to just carry this weight on myself anymore. I want to be ready and released to help so that others can know. And I have this picture. It's like, what if all the churches that we know were really alive? Like they weren't just about themselves or gathering on a Sunday, but they're like, we really just want to bless everyone around us. We want to set them free. We want to get them alive and moving. Wow, what a force that would be, right? That would transform the city pretty fast. So it's like, well, let's get in that direction. Now I know some of us aren't even Christians. We're still trying to figure this stuff out. Some of us are like, I'm a new Christian. Bert, you just hit me with way too much today. And others of us are old Christians with opinions that might disagree with mine. But there's this thing of saying, well, God, one thing I do want, I want to know you. If you're not a Christian, it's like, okay, God, I think God exists. I think you exist. If you are true, speak to my heart. Convict me. If you're a new kind of growing Christian, it's like, okay, God, I really need to be consolidated. Lead me to that place of wholeness, of just being right, being better with you. And if you're an old cynical question, it could be fine. Maybe you're right and I'm wrong. I'm okay with that. I'm okay to be wrong. But say, God, I want to know you deeper. Is there more of you to know? Because there's nothing wrong with saying, God, I just want to know more of you. I want to love you more with more of my heart, with more of my mind, with more of my strength, deeper and greater. That there is no limit to knowing God. Shall we pray? And then we'll come to a time of some more worship. You know, God, I thank you so much because you could have been the kind of God who's like, okay, you believe me now, that's fine. You just go on with your life. But instead, you are a God who continues working in us. Not because we deserve it, but just because you are so gracious and so good. God, will you consolidate our lives? Will you bring us to those places of wholeness? Will you prepare us? And I know that in this group, there are people who are really gifted in this kind of stuff, but aren't there yet. Can you lead them forward so that our church is ready? Not to keep everyone in our church, but so that we can just bless other people. And then they're ready to go wherever you lead them. They can just be a blessing. Because I don't think you want us to just be people who show up to church on a Sunday. From what I understand, God, is you wanted each one of us. That you love each one of us. That you know each one of our problems, our painful histories, our struggles in the present. And Jesus, when we come to you at your cross, we know that you can begin dealing with them and healing us. So we look to you. Spirit, move among us now. In your name we pray. Amen. So we have another time of worship, and this time for you to respond. You can respond by praying with each other, or I'll also be in front to pray with you if you want. Let's come and worship.